Hegemony follows cases like this very closely to make sure we know how to behave ourselves. I frowned, as did Graves.
Are you saying Hegemony has access to information outside our home system, to information that isn't publicly presented by the Galactics for general consumption?
I would never suggest such a thing, Drusus said sternly. That would be a violation of galactic law, and none of you had better breathe a word of it either.
Of course, sir,
Graves muttered. In my own case, I felt like a light had gone on in my head. Of course, we were spying on the Galactics as much as we could. It would be madness not to. But it was dangerous to do it, too. I had to wonder who these spies were and how they operated. To me, that was a ballsy job that made mine look easy. I was pretty sure there wasn't a revival unit waiting around to make a fresh copy of our failed spies.
Don't concern yourselves with how we gather intel. What we've learned from the process is alarming enough. When the battle fleet is called for a second time to any system, they sterilize every rock in orbit around the local star. Every single rock.
But why, sir?
Graves asked. Drusus shrugged.
Could they simply be lazy?
Turov asked,
or irritated at having to leave port and fly out to do their jobs?
Actually, Drusus said, we suspect it's a matter of efficiency. The Empire's resources are always stretched thinly here at the rim of the galaxy. They can't afford to come all the way out to a system and do nothing. They know there's a strong possibility they'll be called back years later to the same system if they take no action. So they don't fool around. When the Narbs make a call, that's good enough for the Galactics. They wipe everything.
I understand, said Turov in a haunted tone. Why bother to take a second look around and decide justly? Who cares if it's a questionable case? Safer to err on the side of caution and to be done with it. An extinct species can't appeal a verdict and can't cause further damage.
Exactly. I felt a sinking sensation in my gut as I listened to the officers discuss the matter. I knew Drusus was right in my heart. The local battle fleet had only made one trip to Earth, long before I was born. During that visit, the Galactics had given us their ultimatum. If they ever returned to Earth's skies with their countless silver hulls shining above the clouds, well, that would be the end of everything. As a kid back in school, I'd longed to see those ships just once. Now I hoped I never would.
If the Nerb ship is in the system, how long do we have?
Asked Turov at last.
Less than a day.
I turned my wandering attention back to the conversation. The officers were leaning forward, almost huddling. They looked like a pack of conspirators plotting something.
That puts a new light on the matter, said Graves carefully. If we want to make any edits to the situation, we have to act fast.
Corvus was lost, so we can't run out of the system, Turov said.
Obviously not, Drusa said.
What if we all self-execute?
Asked Graves.
Right now.
This question stunned me. I stared at each man in turn, wondering if it was a joke. From the look on their faces, I figured it wasn't. Drusus shook his head. Not good enough. There would be bodies everywhere. The evidence would be indisputable. The Narbs won't care about that level of sacrifice. The crimes they'll discover are too large. They can't be erased by a few deaths. The colonists who live here aren't authorized to be outside of our system. That's a serious violation. Primus Turov leaned forward, her eyes shining and decisive.
To save Legion Varus, we're going to have to erase the evidence before the Narbs get here.
I agree, Drusa said. The action is regrettable, but necessary.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I'd worked so hard, and the colonists had come so far. They were our allies now, our own flesh and blood, our long-lost kin. How could we do it fast enough?
Turov asked. The answer is the alien ship, Drusus said. We'll never figure out how to fly it in time. but we just might figure out how to blow it up. The group broke up into harsh whispering. By the time they'd formulated their plan, I was already backing down one of the tunnels. I overheard the details of their plans to kill all the colonists as I began trotting quietly away. They were going to overload the alien ship's engines and turn this valley into a smoking crater. As I got farther away, I moved faster. Dust fell over me, and I tried not to choke on it. I thought I heard someone calling my name, but my tapper was off, and I was pretty far down the tunnels by then, taking random turns to lose any pursuers. Chapter 33. At moments like this, I wonder if I'm crazy. I think I probably am. What was I going to tell my fellow legionnaires if I ever went back to Legion Varus? Sorry, sirs, I had to run off to take a piss, and then I got lost, see? I wasn't really angry at the Legion's brass. After all, they'd been given a tough decision. The way they saw it, either we were all going to get permed, or the colonists had to die. For most people, situations like that turned into relatively easy decisions. They would simply opt to live and let someone else die instead. But it was different for me than it was for the rest of the officers. I knew these colonists personally. Sure, they were weird and some of them were assholes. But couldn't the same be said of any group of humans? Most of all, I couldn't swallow the idea of turning my hands against a local population. It was just plain wrong, and I wasn't going to do it. When you're on the run in a series of dark tunnels, it's hard not to feel fear grip your belly. I didn't have anything other than a sidearm, and I barely knew where I was going. Fortunately, I was able to find a few peepholes and use them to look into the valley and get my bearings. They steered me toward my destination, which was the wreck of Hydra, located behind the northeast wall in the valley. Cool dirt shifted under my feet as I made rapid progress. I wasn't running, not quite. I was trotting in the gloom, keeping my suit lights dialed down to their dimmest illumination levels. I wished I'd had armor, and at least a rifle. But there was no way I was going back to camp for equipment now. I knew that if Legion Varus ever caught me, I'd probably be executed as a deserter. I had to admit, they had good cause for that. Probably any Nairb in the Empire would have recommended it to them. The situation was much bigger than my own personal life, however. I didn't want Legion Varus to get permed on this rock, but I didn't want us to survive by killing off everyone who'd been born on this world and lived a harsh life here. It was just plain wrong. First, Earth had sent the colonists out here and forgotten about them. Then we'd come along unannounced and started bombing their pathetic clusters of rocks. Now, after saving them from alien slavers, we'd changed our minds and decided to kill them after all. "No," I said aloud to the echoing walls. My plan was simple. I was going to warn them. I knew where the investigator's lab was. I would convince him to take his people out of the valley, then deeper into the local tunnels, or out into the badlands around the polar surface of the planet. My fellow legionnaires would never find them in time. They only had to evade death long enough for the Nairbs to get here. After that, everything would be recorded. Killing the colonists wouldn't solve anything at that point, and might even worsen the situation. Would I get justice out of the Nairbs in the end? Maybe not. But it was worth trying. I'd talked them into letting me survive all their legal mumbo-jumbo before, and I was willing to give it another shot. I followed the dark tunnels for what seemed like hours, but was probably only about 20 minutes. I found the first of a series of apertures that looked out over the valley. I took a second to gaze down at the alien ship and the Legion camp. Feeling a pang of remorse, I wondered if I turned around right now and wandered back to the camp, would they take me back? Maybe they would, after a demotion or a good old-fashioned beatdown by Harris. Shaking my head, I steeled myself. I had to warn the colonists. Then I would go back and give contrition a try. I doubted it would work. Turov hated me under the best of circumstances. Grave and Tribune Drusus were no dummies either. They might like me, but outright mutiny wasn't going to sit well with either of them. I forced myself to move faster. When I was moving along at a fast trot, turning up my light levels so I wouldn't trip, I heard something. It was a soft buzzing sound, not unlike that of a housefly coming near. But it wasn't a housefly. I'd heard buzzers too often before to be fooled. I threw myself down in the dirt and rolled over onto my back. I couldn't evade it that way because buzzers had infrared and olfactory sensors. There was no way they'd miss a sweaty man down here in this tunnel. But my plan wasn't evasion. Drawing my sidearm, I cranked the aperture open as widely as I could. Then I waited as the buzzing got louder. Even with a diffuse spread, it wasn't easy to hit a buzzer. Fortunately, it slowed down as it sensed me and tried to figure out why I was lying there on the ground. I fired my weapon. It took two tries before I nailed the buzzer. I'd always been good at swatting flies, and I smiled as the tiny singed drone did a spiraling nosedive into the dirt and died. Jumping up, I stomped on the metal bug until it stopped protesting, then began running again. The buzzers couldn't be operator-driven directly when they worked in the tunnels, because the signals wouldn't penetrate thick stone walls. Whoever had sent this one would wait for it to return, eventually being forced to give up. But that wouldn't be the end of it. If one had been disabled, more would follow. The techs were after me, I could feel it. They wouldn't stop until they'd found me. There wasn't much time now. I forgot about dim lights and quiet steps. I was running all out, scrambling over dirt and stone. I left bits of skin and blood on the sharpest protrusions from the tunnel walls. A crossbow bolt snapped out of the darkness ahead and nearly took me full in the face. I tripped and went sprawling. "Hold on!" I shouted. "It's me, McGill! I'm here to see the investigator!" A pair of cautious colonists crept forward, aiming their black-tipped bolts at me. It took a bit of convincing, but they finally led me to Hydra. I felt anxious every step and kept looking behind me, ears straining to catch the whine of another buzzer. The investigator was back inside his labs. He wasn't in a good mood. As I approached, I heard him throw out an assistant. He poked his head out, glowering, but then he saw me. His expression changed to a look of curiosity. "The schemer," he said. "The runner, the fornicator. What do you want here? You're like a ghost that haunts my world."
"Sorry about that, sir," I said. "I had to come. I had to warn you. Did you say fornicator?"
"Yes. My daughter brags of little else. She's determined to have your child, you know."
I was honestly at a loss for words. He had to be talking about Della. Why hadn't someone, anyone, told me she was his daughter? The investigator walked out of his lab and cocked his head, staring into my face. It was a disconcerting behavior pattern, and I realized now that I'd seen it before. Della had done that more than once. I thought it was a cultural oddity unique to the colonists. Now I suspected it was a family trait.
"Warn me about what, runner?"
"Sir," I began, and I told him the whole thing. I tried to put a good face on it. I tried to explain that the universe was a harsh, cold place, and my people weren't any more heartless than the next band of interstellar mercenaries. But I wasn't even buying it myself. The investigator seemed to be taking it all in with a remarkable lack of concern. But then I got to the part about how Legion Varus planned to kill the colonists.
"Did you say they want to blow up my ship?"
The investigator boomed suddenly.
"Yes, sir. The whole valley. It won't be long now. You have to pull your people out of this cave. You need to run somewhere, up to the surface maybe. You have escape tunnels that lead up to the polar deserts, don't you?"
The investigator stared at me with distant eyes. To me, he looked at least half mad. But I'm not the best judge of other people's state of mind. His hand lashed out and grabbed up my shirt. The smart cloth squirmed and writhed in protest, trying to smooth itself out again.
"No one is blowing up my ship,"
he boomed. Then he pushed past me and ran off, shouting. An alarm went off soon thereafter that sounded like a ship's klaxon. People on the lower decks began moving quickly after that. I stumbled after the investigator, not knowing what to think. The people I saw weren't grabbing up kids and belongings and making a run for it. Quite the opposite. They were gathering weapons, painting their faces black, and applying fresh nanites to their bolts and swords. Finding the investigator, I walked up to him and got his attention.
"Sir," I said, "what's going on? You have to get out of here."
"No, traitor. No thing that crawls in the dark.
No mercenary Earthmen are going to blow up my ship. We're going to take possession of her, as I should have from the very beginning.
But, sir, the Legionnaires... He grabbed onto my arm with surprising strength. I saw that light in his eyes again, and I was pretty sure now that it was the cold, clear light of madness.
We're not running, he told me with absolute certainty. We're attacking. Flee if you want to, but don't interfere.
He left me standing there and rushed off with a growing mass of men and women behind him. I remembered then that these people who'd been left here in the darkness were the rats who liked to fight. All the others had long since been enslaved. Only the hardest hearts among the children of Earth's lost exiles still survived. Even though I sympathized, I was left wondering as I trotted after the swelling army about just what these people thought they were going to do with an alien ship. Following the colonists, I had to admit I felt more than a little sick inside. I'd come here to save them, after all, to warn them. Instead, I'd apparently kick-started the war I'd previously hoped to postpone in the end. The truce was over between my people and theirs. That much was clear. As we marched, we came upon two teams of legionnaires. I felt sorry for both groups. The first was a trio of heavy troops in armor who'd no doubt been sent here to hunt me down. They went down hard in a storm of fire with nanites eating away their eyes and throats. I made sure I touched my tapper to theirs, so the death would be recorded. They could be revived once I told the camp about it. The next group was even more shocked. They were techs, and they'd already dropped their equipment and begun running. No doubt their buzzers had seen the colonist army on the march. The techs didn't make it very far. I thought I'd become pretty good at navigating the tunnels, but watching the colonists, I realized I was a clumsy surface dweller. They seemed to know every stalactite and spur of limestone. They vaulted over obstacles with ease and ran full tilt until they brought down the fleeing techs in a brief, furious action. Following, I touched my tapper to each one in turn, shaking my head. At least I could make sure they wouldn't be permed. A shadow watched me work as the rest of the colonist throng pressed ahead. A voice spoke, and I was surprised to realize I knew its owner.
"What kind of death rite is that?"
Della asked softly. I looked up, startled. She was standing over me, her long legs exposed and dusty. "Exactly that," I said, a gesture of respect for our dead. "I'm wishing them well in their next lives." She turned her head the other way and didn't say anything for a moment as I touched the last of the dead techs with my tapper.
"I chose poorly," she said. "I thought you were a great warrior, but now you've embarrassed me. If your seed quickens within me, I shall cut it out."
This statement got my attention. I straightened. "I was only trying to help," I said. "If you're pregnant, don't blame the kid for the sins of his father."
"His? Are you so sure I'll bear a son?"
I chuckled. "I don't know anything about that, but I came here to warn your people."
"You're a traitor to your own kind, an embarrassment."
I stepped closer to her, and a small blade appeared in her hand. I ignored it.
"Look, we're all the same people. That's why I'm here. Our real enemies aren't human, and believe me, they outnumber us 1,000,000,000 to 1. We don't need to fight amongst ourselves. We can't afford to. The way we bicker and kill one another, that's the embarrassment."
I pushed past her and didn't look back. I heard soft footsteps after a few minutes, but she didn't say anything. I had to hand it to the colonists. They had serious balls. These people didn't know they couldn't win this fight. Wondering about them, I figured they'd changed somewhat by their circumstances. They'd come out here as a sophisticated group, educated, trained, and intelligent. But years of travel and harsh life on Dust World had changed them. They'd become almost tribal, one might even say savage. When darkness fell, they boiled out of the same hole we'd originally used to get close to the ship. They managed to creep on their bellies to within a few meters of the bunkers before they were spotted. Glaring lights flared brightly and bolts began to snap and sizzle. The front line of colonists fell, but the rest charged in closer.
The colonists were too numerous, too close. They shot down the troops in Turov's makeshift bunkers and slid into the firing slits. A brief struggle inside ended with the colonists victorious. "Damn, damn, damn," I said, staring and grimacing. "This is all wrong." I turned toward the distant camp. There had to be a patrol out here, something, someone I could talk to. Things were spiraling out of control. She was fast and almost silent. I hardly knew she was there until she slipped her nanite blade into my back and shoved it deeply into my organs. Gasping, I fell on my face, rolled over, and clawed for my sidearm. But she already had it in her hand. "Della," I gasped. She bent and kissed me in the dark. I felt searing agony and cool lips at the same time.
"You can switch sides again," she said. "You've chosen to go back, so I've helped you on your way."
And then that evil little witch shot me in the face with my own damned pistol. Chapter 34
"Catch him! Don't let him roll off the friggin' gurney, Charlie. He's a big one."
Groaning and curling up into a wet, slimy ball, I howled in remorse and anger. I couldn't recall having felt so betrayed by one of my murderers before.
"What a bitch,"
I breathed, trying to get air. I felt like I was drowning in thick fluids. I coughed and retched.
"Come on, McGill,"
the bio said, slapping me twice with a hard hand. "Get up and off my table. This isn't your first time." I got unsteadily to my feet.
"Anne?"
"What is it, specialist?" she demanded, checking my eyes with a blinding light. "Why the hell do they always do that?"
"Charlie," she barked over her shoulder. "Recharge the calcium. I'm getting a 1-point low read on bone density."
"On it, specialist," said a haggard-looking orderly. He rolled a dolly around to the far side of the revival machine, and I heard the glugging sounds of liquids loading into the back of it.
"The smell of this place,"
I said, as the world became more steady and distinct.
"How can you stand it, Anne? So sour, like piss and vinegar mixed with bacon grease."
"It beats being on the line," she said. Then her voice softened for a second.
"It's not always this bad. It only gets like this during a pitched battle. Most of the time we biotypes have nothing to do. How'd you die, James?"
"My new girlfriend knifed me in the back." This brought chuckles from everyone present. I dragged on some sticky clothing, then I remembered to check my tapper, and I did a U-turn.
"Anne," I said, "there are a lot of recorded deaths in my tapper from the tunnels. So, report them to Central. They'll be put in the queue with the rest."
I hesitated.
"I'm disconnected from Central. Can't I just give you their IDs directly?"
She came to me, frowning. The machine behind her was churning out a fresh body, and I tried not to look at it. When Anne came close, she touched her tapper to mine, and the information was passed.
"You're in trouble, aren't you?"
she said.
"Just see that these people get revived, okay?"
"Will do."
I hesitated. Anne Grant had helped me to live again on more than one occasion when I shouldn't have. She'd presided over my birth many times more than my own mother.
"Anne, do you know anything about the attack on the ship?"
I asked her.
"Yes, well, just what's on the feed. Those crazy colonists broke in and holed up inside. They closed all the ramps up tight. Turov is royally pissed. She's massing up troops to retake the hatches."
"Damn, can't anyone get along on this planet?"
Anne stepped close and looked up at me.
"I saw something about you on the feed too, James," she whispered. "They're looking for you."
"Yeah," I said. "I'm a Legion favorite. Can you forget to report my revival for a few minutes? Maybe mark me down as a recycle."
"All right. You've got 30 minutes. Make them count."
She squeezed my hand, gave me a worried, searching look, and then disappeared back into the revival chamber. After gearing up in armor and finding a new heavy weapon, I walked all the way out of the camp and back toward the alien ship. This wasn't anything unusual, fortunately. Plenty of people had been killed tonight, and the processing was expected to go on for hours. Walking in twos and threes, we were to report back to the ship as soon as we could to help with the new assault. I caught up with a man I recognized as I came close to the ship, which loomed in the darkness like an artificial mountain, a hulking mass of metal from the stars. "Carlos," I asked. He wheeled around in surprise.
"McGill? You frigger, I hate you so much. Can't you just die and stay dead?"
"That's not in the cards, my man," I said, and I clasped arms with him. Carlos suddenly turned serious and lowered his voice.
"Might not be so easy to waltz home this time. The Primus really has her cute, tight little butt in a nut."
I know, I said. "It's all a big misunderstanding. It's my fault, really. I was led off by a colonist, but this time she killed me." Carlos stared at me for a second, then he grinned.
"You are so full of shit. Your eyes should be as brown as mine, you know that, don't you?"
"Yeah. Can you help me out?"
"I'll try to play along. But I'm not getting permed for you. I'm not getting permed for anyone."
That was Carlos in a nutshell. He'd die for you, but not permanently. His loyalty had its limits. It was almost dawn when we reached the ship. The day was clear, and it became oppressively hot as soon as the sunlight slanted down, hitting the high walls of the valley a kilometer or two above our heads. I quietly rejoined my unit, which had gathered around Graves. I stood at the back. None of the officers seemed to notice me immediately. With a set of steel armor on, one man in third unit looked a lot like the next. I'd yet to dare turning on my tapper because everyone would know where I was the moment I did.
"Okay, troops," Graves said. "This is going to be rough. We've got less than an hour to take this ship. Gear up lightly. Just marching all the way up to the bridge will take half that time."
Carlos's hand went up. I could have shot him. He was standing right next to me, and the first thing he had to go and do was call attention to himself.
"What is it, Ortiz?"
Graves said.
"Sir, we can't possibly sweep the whole ship in that amount of time. This thing is huge, sir."
"Yeah, I know. But we've got a time constraint, and we're going to meet it. Hopefully the rebels will meet us in battle, lose, and have the sense to surrender. I don't have to..."
He broke off, then, and stared right at me.
"Good God, is that you, McGill?"
"Sir, yes, sir. Reporting back from revival, ready and geared as..."
"Get up here, you crazy bastard."
The jig was up. I was in full bullshit mode, but I had a feeling it wasn't going to work unless Graves wanted it to. He was a very hard man to bamboozle. I trotted around the gathering while troops stared and buzzed. I ignored them all and put a serious expression on my face as I approached my superior officer. To my chagrin, Harris appeared, trotting alongside me. He had a grin on his face that was predatory.
"I told you I was going to get you, McGill," he said. "I told you."
"Good to see you too, Vet." When we reached Centurion Graves, Harris had his sidearm out. He flipped off the safety and kept grinning.
"With your permission, sir,"
he shouted. Graves frowned at him.
"This isn't Christmas, Harris. Have some decorum."
"My apologies, sir,"
he shouted, grinning all the while. Graves sucked in a huge breath and let it out again.
"McGill, walk with me."
Harris looked disappointed as I went for a little stroll to the base of the ramp with Graves. I didn't say anything. I knew I really didn't have to.
"What's your line, McGill? Do you even have one?"
"Line, sir?" I asked as innocently as I could. "I can lie, just ask anyone from my school days. I'm not a master like Carlos, but I can pull off the look and sound of an innocent man. I worked that angle now, as hard as I could." Graves shook his head.
"That's not going to fly. There's no way you're not getting permed without an airtight alibi. I know you don't have that, but you'd better at least try."
"Sir, I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about. I'd like to make a report on recent events, however."
"You do that."
"Well, sir, it was like this. When our meeting in the tunnel was getting to the interesting part, well, I felt the urgent call of nature." Graves put up his hand to stop me.
"Are you shitting me?" Seriously, McGill. You ran off into the tunnels and fomented a deadly attack on your own people because you had to take a crap? That's your story?
Not exactly, sir. While I was relieving myself, I was approached by a certain colonist who knew me. Graves stared at me.
That crazy mother, the investigator?
No, sir, the colonist in question is his daughter.
Graves was frowning now. I knew that was a good sign. When you bullshit somebody and they start to believe, they always frown, because they're beginning to doubt themselves.
His daughter?
Yes. Della, the scout woman, the person I first contacted. Anyway, we discussed matters, and I was taken hostage. The enemy was angry about our taking of the ship, and they were preparing to storm it.
More frowning from Graves, I dared to feel hope.
You're telling me you followed some chick off into the dark and screwed her, is that it? And then what? You got lost after that?
I hesitated. Graves made a hissing sound through his teeth.
You're such a pain in the ass, McGill. Do you know that we had a lot of troops out looking for you? Also, a team with techs and buzzers were searching those tunnels. They go on forever. And you were playing footsies with the locals. Our search party never came back, and we can't revive them without the confirmation of their deaths.
I held up my tapper until I got his attention again. I found a solution for that, sir. I met up with the search team as I was dragged along with the colonists. They killed 3 heavies and several techs. I recorded their IDs and reported them to the bio people. They'll be out and back on the line in an hour.
Graves narrowed his eyes, looking at my tapper.
How come your tapper hasn't identified you to the network?
I shook my head and eyed my forearm. It's the damnedest thing, sir. The organic circuitry must not be working. Not even this copied version. I'll have to get the text to look at it.
All right, Graves said. Your story is bullshit, but at least it's attractive bullshit. Maybe we can get past the Primus eventually. But you'll have to be demoted in rank. You're a regular again. You can still carry your heavy kit for the rest of this mission, as you're trained for it. But you're not a specialist any longer, McGill.
This pronouncement gave me a pang of regret. I nodded.
I understand, sir, I said. And I really did. Graves hadn't believed me, not for a second. But he was willing to play along in order to not lose a good man on a lonely planet.
Off the record,
Graves said quietly.
I didn't think it would be right to kill all these colonists just to save our own hides either. But I wasn't calling the shots when the decision was made, and it might be too late now. They've screwed up by taking the ship rather than running off into the desert. Now everyone in the Legion wants them dead.
I nodded, looking up into the pinkish-blue sky overhead. Graves frowned at me.
I'm letting you off easy, McGill,
he said.
The least you can do is pay attention.
Remember what you said about running out of time, sir? I asked, pointing upward. As he looked up, his face sagged. There was a shadow coming over the valley. It soon darkened the skies and the entire valley. The NAB ship had arrived.
Chapter 35. The NAB ship wasn't a battle wagon. Bureaucrats usually didn't carry a payload of hellburners with them, ready to fall on our heads. We feared them all the same. The power of the Empire was behind every word any NAB spoke to a lowly species like ours. They didn't have to wield force directly. They ruled through the threat of a vast power that might be unleashed, should we fail to please them. Being an unimportant species on the fringe of the galaxy was both good and bad. As long as no one noticed us, we were effectively invisible to the great races of beings in the core systems, thousands of light years away. Staying invisible had become our best trick. It was the goal of any world like ours. Today, however, the cold light of NAB logic was to shine down upon us. Once the ship had darkened the skies of Dustworld, all attempts to hide the truth ended abruptly. We stopped fighting with the colonists and ignored them and their stolen ship. Instead, we focused on organizing ourselves. Lifters rolled in from other valleys all day long as the Legion gathered its full strength. We didn't know if the Nerbs would want to perform a head count, but if they did, we were ready. Within 10 hours after the Nerb arrival, every Legionnaire had been revived and given a full kit. We polished our gear, and the lifters had come from every valley on the planet to unload full cohorts on the open polar deserts. There we stood in ranks, waiting for inspection. I was near the end of a line of troops that had to be a kilometer long. 50 ranks stood ahead of me and 20 or so more behind. We stood in the blazing sun with the dust whipping into our closed visors. I had to admit, we were a pretty impressive sight, standing at attention in our thousands. The first 4 cohorts were light troops, those sorry bastards. Soft gear, cheap smart cloth, and substandard air conditioners. They cradled their snap rifles with what had to be aching arms. My armor was much heavier, but I had better temperature controls and an exoskeleton to hold up the weight. Each cohort was broken into 10 units of 100 troops, led by a centurion. Every unit had a flag, just as the Romans had so many centuries before us. The flags were red, with gold print that identified our units. These days, of course, we didn't need to fly flags to show us who to follow on the battlefield. We had tappers, heads-up displays inside our helmets, and a dozen other pieces of high-tech gear to serve that purpose. But on special occasions like this, when we wanted to dress up and show off, we still broke out the old gear and unfurled the banners. As the most senior non-com in the unit, Veteran Harris had the honor of holding up our unit's flag. It was emblazoned with the wolf's head emblem of Legion Varus and our cohort and unit numbers. Seeing the banner flapping there and the strong, hot winds gave me a moment of pride. After a solid hour of standing around in the sun, however, my pride was fading. I waved at a tech running down the ranks, offering power to any trooper who was running low. To my surprise, it was none other than Natasha. "Hey, pretty lady," I called. "Need some power, McGill?" "Sure, give me a boost." I let my plasma tube down to touch the dust that now covered my boots entirely and offered her an arm. She had a drone following her that was loaded with power packs. She plugged into my external port and I watched my gauges turn green as the juice flowed. "Talk to me, Natty," I said. "What the heck is going on inside the Nerb ship? Is the brass going to keep us standing out here until we're buried under a sand dune?" She cast a nervous look over her shoulder toward the ship. It had landed on the planet's surface, up above the valley floor. Naturally, we'd been obliged to come up here and stand in parade in front of it. We were arranged in a massive square between the hulking ship and our swarm of 9 lifters. "Let's just hope they let us live, James," she said quietly, not looking at me. I reached out and grabbed her hand as she disconnected me. I made sure I didn't squeeze too hard. Powered gauntlets could crush a person's bones. "You know something, don't you?" I asked. "Tell me about it." She glanced at me worriedly and shook her head. "It's best I didn't." "Come on," I told her. "Things could hardly get worse. Either we're screwed or we're not." "I've only caught bits and pieces from officers as I've juiced them up. I think things are going badly. The Nerbs want to know everything. They aren't buying any of our cover stories. They want to investigate the colonists who are still holed up in that alien ship. They want to talk to any surviving aliens, the colonists, everyone." I frowned. That didn't sound so good. "They might burn us all down, James," Natasha said, sounding scared. "They might want to burn us all. The whole Legion? For starters, Earth could be in danger, too. We're not supposed to be colonizing new planets. We're not really supposed to even be out here." "Yeah, I know. Hey, since this might be our last hour under the sun, how about you and I have a little goodbye kiss?" Natasha snorted in disbelief. "As if I would. Can you guess what Kivi told me?" I sighed. "I have a pretty good idea." Natasha walked off, annoyed. I watched her go wistfully. It wasn't long after that when a peculiar call came into my helmet. I answered and became concerned when I saw the caller's ID. It was Primus Turov herself.
"McGill, get your ass up here right now."
"Sir, where's here, sir?"
The Nerb ship, you moron! Get to the entrance! The Nerbs will direct you!"
I lurched into motion. My legs were stiff from standing so long, but I ran anyway. Graves came to intercept me and got into my face.
"Leave your weapon and your sidearm."
I knew what that meant. The officers didn't want a scene, in case I was to be executed. The look on Graves' face was as hard as his steel-gray eyes. I gave up my guns and trotted off at a steady, ground-eating pace toward the ship. I ran first down the ranks, then up between the units. I passed Natasha along the way, and she stared at me.
"Should have given me that kiss while you could," I shouted.
Hustling up the hulking Nerb ship, I had to wonder exactly what they might want with little old me. I didn't think Legion Varus could place all their sins on my head and get off with a warning after perming a single soldier, and the Nerbs had no reason to want me dead in particular. They didn't think in terms of individuals when meting out punishment anyway. With nothing to go on, I dropped my worries. I figured I'd learn how to play their game as I went along. Until then, I'd keep my mouth shut and act the part of the eager legionnaire. Despite what Turov said, there weren't any Nerbs to greet me at the hatchway. All I found was a series of flashing green lights on the floor. That was typical of the Nerbs. They didn't make things personal. As I hustled along, following the lights, I noticed that they vanished behind me. I passed what seemed like endless bulkheads and cavernous empty holds. I had to wonder why they'd brought such a big ship out here. Could they really be planning to rescue us and give us a ride home? That would be nice, if uncharacteristic of the Nerbs. At the end of a particularly long passage, I finally found Primus Turov. Her eyes were so wide I could see the whites all the way around. I wasn't sure if she was scared or pissed off. I thought it might be a little of both.
"Good of you to take your sweet time getting here," she said.
"It was so nice outside, I hated to come in." She stared at me for a second, then shook her head bemusedly. She looked over my armor and dusted it off. While we spoke, she worked to clean my armor, which I thought was sort of weird. I'd never been spruced up before by someone who flat-out hated me.
"Don't you even open your damned mouth in there unless called upon, McGill."
"Wouldn't think of it, sir."
"And don't accidentally kill anyone, either."
"I'll try to remember that." At last, the final hatchway opened. I walked inside, taking two steps forward, and then stood at attention. I looked around, knowing that they probably couldn't see my eyes moving through my visor at this distance. The chamber was unlike any I'd seen yet aboard this ship. There were fat, fluffy chairs everywhere. On most of them were Nerbs, draped over their furniture like seals on rocks. The Nerbs were an odd race. They were green-skinned and green-blooded. They reminded me of living beanbags. They reportedly started off as an aquatic race, but had evolved into a tool-using species with curling flippers that could manipulate objects with great dexterity. These days, they were the local accountants for the Empire. Unfortunately, in an organization as large as the Empire, accountants and bureaucrats had grown in power. Every race we'd ever met lived in fear of the Nerbs and their heartless regulatory powers. When I stepped into the room, a few Nerbs turned to look at me. They soon turned their attention back to the Tribune, who was the only other human in the chamber. Tribune Drusus didn't look happy. In all the times I'd seen him, he'd always come off as a paragon of calm judgment and wisdom. Today he looked like a perp in handcuffs, a guilty man who knew he'd finally been caught.
"This is the man," Drusus said to the Nerb prefect. "He's the only one that might get an answer out of them."
I glanced at Drusus, hoping for a clue concerning what I was supposed to be doing here, but he gave me nothing.
"Immediate self-execution would be far less time-wasting," said the prefect.
This gave my heart a squeeze. It began pounding in my chest.
"I'm within my rights," Drusus replied.
The Nerb's translating device made a rattling sound. I think it was trying to translate a grunt of disgust.
"Very well. Tell it to speak."
Drusus turned to me. "James McGill, we need you to contact the humans inside the alien ship." "Who was their leader?"
"You mean the investigator, sir?" Yes, that's him. Get him on the comm line. I said, at a loss. I don't think he's going to answer my...
Please try, McGill.
A comm link with an outside hookup was brought to me. I removed my helmet and set it aside. Putting on the comm link, I tried to open a channel. We'd left our comm equipment inside the ship before the colonists had retaken it, but really I thought it was a long shot that they were listening at all. To my surprise, the channel did open, but no one answered my call. "Hello?" I asked. "Can I talk to someone, please?"
Drusus looked impatient. "We've tried that. The communication is getting to the ship, but it isn't being answered by anyone."
"They might not even be listening," I began to point out. Drusus made a rapid hand gesture as if he were erasing my words out of the air.
"McGill, they are listening. The trouble is that we haven't said anything yet that they wish to respond to. Do you understand?"
I was beginning to. Drusus had made some kind of commitment to the Nairbs with regard to the colonists. Maybe they demanded to talk to them, and so far no one had been listening to our demands. For a second I considered the problem. Sure, there might not be anyone around to pick up the phone, but I had to try. I could tell from the Tribune's attitude that it was of the utmost importance that I succeed.
"I understand, sir," I said.
After a moment of thought, I opened the channel again. As before, it opened, but no one said anything. "This is Specialist James McGill," I said, then paused. "Correction, I'm Legionnaire James McGill of Legion Varus."
Drusus made a rapid hand gesture that indicated I should get on with the show. I tried not to look at him.
"I need to talk to the investigator," I said. I racked my brain trying to come up with something that might get the man on the phone. I didn't have much on him. "This is of great importance. It is in regard to Della, your daughter, sir. Please speak with me."
I waited for several seconds, but there was no response.
"Maybe you'd like to use code," I said, grasping at straws. "If you're having trouble with your comm equipment, try keying the transmit button to inform us of that fact."
Drusus looked alarmed. The Nairb prefect perked up.
"They have failed to comply for an extended period," said the Nairb. "Criminals frequently seek to evade justice through hiding in ridiculously obvious places. This case is no different."
"Please, prefect," Drusus said. "Allow us a bit more time."
"Irritating. You have reached the end of your useful..."
"Please, sir, I beg of thee."
"Beg? You plead for imperial mercy?"
"Yes."
The Nairbs barked at one another for several seconds.
"Very well," said the prefect at last. "It is within our character to extend mercy in these circumstances, but I must point out that you are only inconveniencing my staff further with these pointless delays."
"I'm so sorry, sir," Drusus said. Even as he spoke, he made circular motions toward me, indicating I should proceed. I was sweating now. Whatever the Nairbs had in mind for us, it couldn't be good.
"Investigator," I said into the comm link, "if you don't want to talk about Della, maybe you'll be willing to discuss your own survival and the survival of your ship. The Empire will destroy it if you don't comply immediately."
The Nairbs squawked and shuffled on their flippers.
"That statement was unauthorized," complained the prefect.
"I'm so sorry," Drusus repeated. "This man is merely an enlisted interpreter. He's not fully versed in the..."
"Investigator? We're coming in there. Surely you can see the Nairb ship. You told me you knew about the Empire. The squids knew about it too. You can't be completely ignorant concerning the vast power you face. I would advise you..."
"No one is going to take or damage my ship," said a voice suddenly.
I paused, blinking stupidly. Drusus looked as shocked as I was.
"Is this the investigator speaking?"
I demanded officiously. I decided to channel the Nairbs with their bad attitude. It seemed to be getting a reaction.
"We've been listening to your prattling demands for better than an hour now. I'm switching this box off."
"Investigator, don't do it, please. I'm the Star Man, the fellow who came to your caverns and met with you personally. I forged a truce between our peoples that..."
"A truce? That arrangement was nothing but a ruse. The new ship is ours,
and as soon as we figure out how to fly it, you will all regret your actions."
"Threats," the Nair prefect said excitedly. "The humans have threatened us. That casts an entirely new light on the matter. Take note, scribes. New charges must be drawn up."
Drusus had his eyes shut in horror.
"Investigator," I said, "you have to be very careful what you say now. All our lives are in jeopardy. I'm not threatening you or your ship. I'm trying to help you, to help both of us out of a bad spot."
The investigator was quiet for several seconds, and the Nairbs moved restively on their pillows. I began to wonder if he really had shut off the comm box.
"Twice now, McGill. You've used the possessive form when referring to the cephalopod ship. Do I take it that Earth accepts our ownership of this vessel?"
I had no authority to do anything, so I eyed Drusus. He looked at me and nodded.
"Yes," I said. "We're willing to make that concession, but you have to help us out. If the Nairbs don't agree, the opinions of Earth mean nothing. You understand that you and I, and every being in this galaxy, is a citizen of the Empire at best. If not, you're nothing more than an animal, an insect that might be crushed at any moment."
"Hyperbole," complained the investigator. "Idle threats invented to intimidate us and force us into giving up a superior position."
I almost laughed.
"You've got a few hundred fighters locked up in a ship you don't have any idea how to operate," I said. "That is hardly a superior position, but let's not get into all that. Let's horse trade."
"What?"
"Let's make a mutually beneficial deal, sir. Talking can hardly do any harm, and it might do some good."
"I find your premise flawed, but I'm willing to listen."
Turning to Drusus, I offered him the comlink.
"You're doing fine," he said. "Just keep him talking. He has to come out and allow the Nairbs to inspect that ship."
I winced. That was a tall order.
"Investigator," I called, "will you allow a Nairb delegation to board your ship and take a look around?"
"I thought we had a truce aligning ourselves against alien invaders, McGill."
"You broke that truce when you attacked us," I pointed out. "But we're willing to reinstate it, and you will maintain control of the ship."
"I understand something now," said the investigator. "You were chosen to infiltrate my people because you're the most manipulative of your kind. I see it all now. You pretend to be of low rank and little consequence. Your own people even performed an elaborate pantomime operation, going through the motions of chasing you through our tunnels."
"Sir,"
I tried to break in, but the investigator just kept on going.
"You wormed your way into my sanctuary, attempted to impregnate my daughter. Oh yes, I'm fully aware of that. And now you attempt to edge me out of my ship."
"Please, sir," I shouted. "Listen to me. We're all the same. We're all humans, and we need to work together. There are so few of us out here among the stars. We're a tiny population circling two tiny star systems."
"Ah, and now you provide me with a fresh emotional appeal. Yes, we're colonists from Earth, but we've been gone too long from our ancestral homeworld to count ourselves as one with you and your legions, unlike you interstellar mercenaries that..."
The investigator continued his rant, but everyone had stopped listening. The Nairbs were barking like a pack of furless seals.
"A colony,"
shouted the Nairb prefect. He was quite agitated.
"There are few undertakings possible by a subjugated species that can rival such an act. Further, you've attempted to hide this high crime, accruing an additional charge. The transcriptions of this inquiry must be carefully gone over anew. Each count of perjury, obfuscation, conspiracy, and contempt will be individually cited. I must say, Tribune, we must thank you for insisting we listen to this insane individual in the cephalopod ship. Together with your spokesman, he's brought many dark deeds to light. You have greatly aided our prosecution, and the reckoning is becoming sweeter by the moment."
Tribune Drusus walked over to me and switched off the comm box. The investigator was still complaining until the signal died. The Nairbs wouldn't listen to anything else we had to say after that.
"We have no need of further evidence," their leader told us. The accused ringleaders must stand here and await the final verdict.
They recused themselves in an adjoining chamber to discuss our fate privately. I watched them file out with a sick feeling in my guts. The hatchway clanged shut with a booming sound that reminded me of a tomb slamming closed. I turned to the tribune. "I don't think that went very well," I said. Drusus didn't even look at me. The hatch swung open into the adjoining passage and revealed the rest of the officers. They'd been listening to the proceedings. They buzzed among themselves dispiritedly. Primus Turov, however, walked up to me and put a hand on my shoulder. She had to reach way up, as she wasn't all that tall, and I was more than 2 meters in height in my armor.
"You're a real piece of work, McGill,"
she said, marveling. "Why, thank you, sir."
"Did you really screw that colonist's daughter?"
It wasn't quite like that. She was no innocent flower. She's more like a feral cat than a farmer's daughter. In fact, she killed me herself, twice. Turov laughed bitterly.
"I bet she had damned good reasons to do it."
Chapter 36. The delegation filed back in about half an hour later. There were 15 Nairbs all told. I guess they were the same ones as before. They all looked alike to me. But this time, there was a single Galactic as well. I was slightly disappointed as I recognized his type. He was spidery, with a central body mass that looked like a black widow. He had 6 legs, or were they arms? It was hard to tell, as they all ended with a grasping appendage. These hands were used intermittently as feet, or to manipulate objects. Behind me, the hatch opened, and 10 human officers walked in. Every one of them was a Primus, a leader of an entire cohort. Along with Drusus himself, this was every piece of brass Legion Varus had. They'd all been brought in to hear the verdict. The head Nairb spoke up first. His title was Prefect, and he never gave us a name. I knew his type, all pompous, officious attitude. Nairbs were all pretty much the same, both in personality and physique. They were fussy aliens who loved details. Born pencil pushers and desk jockeys, my father always said, even though no one used pencils anymore. To me, the prefect was just another green sack of gelatinous flesh. The prefect started barking. Before he got through the first minute of his speech, I was annoyed and bored at the same time. After a flowery address concerning the loyalty and commitment to the Empire, extolling the virtues of well-served patronage within our local chapter of the Enforcement Bureau, the Nairb announced his verdict. We were all to self-execute, legionnaires and colonists alike. I could not recall a less happy moment in my lifetime. I'd been killed plenty of times before, but I'd never heard a verdict handed down that required everyone I knew to die. We were all going to be permed. That's what this order meant. There wasn't going to be anyone else around to revive us. No ships from Earth would come out and rescue us. Even if they did find our bones someday, they'd have to be crazy to revive us after they heard about what happened here on this dusty rock in space.
"Relay the order to all your sub-commanders immediately," the prefect told Drusus in conclusion. "Chief Inspector Zlur is here to serve as witness for galactic justice."
I nodded to myself. Chief Inspector Zlur. I'd personally killed this alien twice. He had revival equipment of his own, naturally, being a privileged galactic. He didn't seem to recognize me, fortunately. If he had, he'd probably want to add an additional count to humanity's long list of crimes. My commanders looked from one to another sheepishly. I guess no one wanted to go first. Taking a deep breath, I reached over and plucked Primus Turov's sidearm from her holster. She looked shocked, but then watched me in fascination as I placed the muzzle of the weapon under my chin. Everyone fell silent, except for the Nairbs, who were grunting in anticipation.
"Just a second," I said. "What about Earth? If we all kill ourselves now, is this matter at an end?"
"That is no concern of yours," Inspector Zlor said.
Obedience is required. That's all you need to know. Proceed. We are recording this incident.
I pulled the weapon away from my throat. Primus Turov reached down to my gauntlet and tried to